Richard Kimble. The destination, Death Row State Prison. The irony, Richard Kimble is innocent. Proved guilty, what Richard Kimble could not prove was that moments before discovering his murdered wife's body, he saw a one-armed man running from the vicinity of his home. Richard Kimble ponders his fate as he looks at the world for the last time and sees only darkness. But in that darkness, fate moves its huge hand.
All right, and now the real stars of the program, Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken, and I won't include myself because I'm not one of the real stars. Hi, everybody. If you want to join into tonight's discussion, which will be on Escape into Black, Part 1, tonight we'll be discussing Acts 1 and 2. Telephone number is 800-407-KSAB, or you can email me at talk@ksab.org. And let's start things off with Mr. Fugitive himself, Bob Neer.
Thank you, Dave. Richard Kimble is a great escape artist. He manages to wiggle out of every seemingly hopeless situation that he finds himself in. But strangely enough, he's not a master of disguises. In fact, during his desperate run across the country, he does literally nothing but change the color of his hair. He doesn't wear regular glasses. He grows no beard. He doesn't even hide behind sunglasses even when the sun is out. He relies instead on being fast on his feet. He has a dazzling array of aliases. He's quick on the draw when cops stop him and want to know who he is. He comes up with names in an instant, and on those times when he's caught giving medical care, he's got that old reliable story of how he was a medic in the Korean War. He knows he can't tell his real story, so he's got the fake stories lined up in a row. And that serves him very well. Unless, of course, something derails him, and in episode number 39 of season 2, Escape into Black, that's exactly what happens. It all begins with Kimble checking on a rumor of a one-armed man sighting while he's in one of those greasy all-night diners that he's too familiar with. A cry from the kitchen that the stove is on fire, Kimble going to help out as he always does, a terrible explosion that sends him reeling backwards onto the floor, and in a matter of minutes, he's in the hospital with two doctors probing him for info on who he is. Good question, since Kimble has no idea. Yes, the man who often is everybody now finds himself literally a nobody, even in his own tormented and confused mind. There are several terrific moments in Act 1 and in Act 2, which we'll do in the second part of this show. But first, above all of this, is something more important. The introduction of a character so memorable that the mere mention of her name brings back a flood of good memories for us. Another woman, only that rarest of the rare, not a love interest, just a person trying to do a job as a social worker in a hospital. Ken, I do believe you will agree with me. The character's name is Margaret Ruskin, the actress is Betty Garrett, and this is just about the best performance by an actress in all 120 episodes of The Fugitive.
Yes, I agree. In fact, I think it is the best guest actress performance throughout the entire series, even better than Susan Oliver and Vera Mills and even Jacqueline Scott and even, Suzanne Pizette, and we can list all the women.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Betty Garrett really nailed this part, and this was a huge story, Kimble having amnesia. And when we're introduced, to Margaret Ruskin, she's a social worker. We, the audience, we're just sitting back, and she looks like, just an everyday social worker, not really doing much. She has a scene there with the doctor, and they're talking. But as the story developed, right away, I just liked her right away. I'm sure you did, too. And you just identify with her. You kind of latch onto her, and you listen to every word she does and every act. And as the story just played out, I just really got involved with her. She was a big part of this story.
Well, you know, sometimes when you're watching a long-running series, you've been watching it for a while, you know who the main characters are, and when somebody shows up out of nowhere, it can be very difficult to buy into them. Who is this person? What is she doing here? How does she know what's going on? Well, we've never seen her before. This is one of those rare moments when an actress, as you said very well, just nails it to the wall immediately. She knows exactly what to do. I mean, I don't know whether she was a fan of the show. Maybe she had watched it herself. She seemed to know exactly, almost instinctively, how to act in this story. So that's actually the best part of her whole performance there, is that she slips into it so naturally. And I bought it immediately. Oh, yeah, sure, that's Margaret Ruskin, the social worker who's been following Richard Kimball from the beginning. Except she hasn't. I mean, she has no idea who he is any more than he does. And we see, there's a lot of emotion in this story, and it's set up right at the beginning when we see her talking to Dr. Town, the psychiatrist in the hospital, about a young girl who was into drugs, and he told her father about it, and the girl committed suicide. Right away she's crying, so we know that she's very emotional, and that if she meets Richard Kimball, there's going to be something happening there, and it really does. This is a really, really spectacular performance. I think the story would have been good no matter what, but having her in it really adds something to it. Before we get into individual scenes, Kitty, what do you think about this?
Well, I thought it was very good. And, you know, I would even go so far as to say, you know, we've talked in the past of some characters we wouldn't have minded seeing again in some other episodes. I think it would have been nice to see the character of Margaret Ruskin come back, you know, and have him bump into her in another episode. I think that could have been very interesting. But yeah, she was a very strong character, certainly a very compassionate character, and she really was genuine in wanting to help Richard Kimball.
Yeah, she has, right at the start there, she has a confrontation with him, and it's really not, you know, they're not getting along too well. I mean, she explains that she's trying to help him, and this is kind of an angry Richard Kimball. We don't normally see him this way when he's out sitting in the lounge out there, and she's speaking to him, trying to get to the bottom of things. He's resentful. He seems very angry about what's happened to him, and that is kind of unusual to see that. I would have expected him to be just so confused he couldn't even talk, but he's got really a lot of anger here. After the accident or the stove blowing up at the beginning of the story, he wakes up in the hospital and he's got a couple of doctors hovering over him, asking a lot of very probing questions. One of them, the Dr. Town, the neuropsychiatrist in the hospital, played by Ivan Dixon, one of my favorite actors from the '60s. He was always really, really great. He's as a matter of fact, everybody is great in this story, but I think aside from hers, he's the other really great acting part in this particular episode. And what I like about this opening scene is that it puts us, the viewers, in a very uncomfortable position. We don't really know what to do here. Where's Confucius Kimball? What does he do? He's trying to figure out who he is, but we know that he can't figure out who he is. He can't stay this way. That's too dangerous. We can't pull for him to lay there in bed and actually remember who he is, because if he does, and anybody knows the name Richard Kimball, he's cooked right there alone. So I kind of like stories that put the edge on you when you're watching them. And this is a really, really great moment. And let's not forget, perhaps above all, the fantastic performance by David Jansen. I think this story might feature the best work by David Jansen in the entire series, as he lays in bed there, grimacing, actually, so painful. I felt it myself. Kitty, were you impressed by that? I mean, his work in this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, David Jansen's always good at making those facial expressions.
Yeah.
You know, he makes you feel his pain whenever he gets those expressions. So, yeah, I mean, this was certainly very well done.
Yeah, he does it, you know, let's face it, the producers and the writers of the series know the strong point there, so they try to find stories that allow him to use that facial expression. I don't think he ever does it better than he does it here. I mean, you get the feeling that he really can't remember who he is, but that somewhere in the back of his very confused mind is this warning that you can't, don't look any further, because there's a lot of danger here. I want to point out right now one of my favorite scenes early on, and that's after Kimball talks to Margaret Ruskin for the first time. She goes out in the hallway with him, and he sees a man walking down the hallway from the other direction who just happens to be a one-armed man. And the camera focuses in, wearing a robe, and it shows the end of the robe there where his arm should be, kind of flapping. And David Jansen, another great performance, just looks absolutely terrified. He has no idea why, but he collapses, literally collapses against the wall. Ken, what do you think about that one?
Very well done. I was convinced by the acting of David Jansen that he really had amnesia.
I know.
And, you know, that's not hard to do. You know, we've seen a lot of amnesia stories in other kinds of television shows.
Sure.
But David Jansen, you know, I like the numeral sequence also of the episode where they put this story, episode 39,
right.
You know, in season 2. And I thought it was perfect where they put it. You couldn't have put this in season 1, and
no.
Obviously you can't do this in season 4.
Right.
But, yeah, he also he kind of reveals that when he fell down, wasn't he going to help the guy?
No, that's in Act 2. We'll talk about that when we get to Act 2, where he sees a patient. Who's
oh,
in
that was
distress.
Later?
Right, that's in Act 2. On this one, he simply sees the man walking from the other end of the hallway, and he flips out completely because the guy's got one arm. But he sees a lot of one-armed men in the series. We know the other stories where he sees guys out on the street and thinks that he's got the right guy. In this case, though, the difference is he doesn't know why he feels the way he does. I mean, why this incredible reaction just because there's a man walking from the other end of the hallway with one arm?
He doesn't even understand it. Did you like the wardrobe they had on him? He was wearing pajamas with that, you know. It was kind of funny looking at him that he's kind of rolling or walking around.
I know. He almost looks like he's lounging around the hospital, and he could stay there except for all these questions being asked. I'm a little curious about the Dr. Town, though. Great performance by Ivan Dixon, but he's suspicious of Kimball from the minute he sees him laying in the bed, right away and throughout the entire episode. Who is this guy, and why is it he seems to be a doctor, but maybe he's not? There's a lot of suspicion there. You'd think that would be normal for a doctor to be that suspicious of anybody. I think that he would help a patient try to remember, but they seem to be very suspicious of him.
Yeah, that was one thing I didn't quite understand about it. It's like he didn't know Kimball from Adam.
Exactly.
So, you know, and the guy's suffering from amnesia. I mean, does he treat everybody who's been in an accident with amnesia like that?
Right. You can even see him glaring down at him as he's hovering over the bed, as if, you know, there's something going on here. I mean, this guy's hiding something. I'm thinking to myself, he's not hiding anything. He doesn't know who he is. He's just laying in bed. I don't think that it helps the patient to stand there and beat him over the head with it. It's like, I mean, it gets worse. This is nothing in the early part. I mean, it gets worse in the parts in Acts 2 and 3 and 4. And of course, eventually, Town latches on to the fact that Kimball is hiding something. But it seemed odd to me that a doctor would say, you know what, you have amnesia for a reason. There's something you're covering up. And I don't think that really works that way in real life. You get amnesia because you get amnesia, because you get knocked on the head. It has nothing to do with really hiding anything. But
all right. I wanted to ask, is proof that he had the amnesia, did he forget his lines?
No, he never does that.
All right. And this goes back to last program's discussion. Did he have medical insurance? Did he have a car that he could produce?
He has never paid for anything.
Yeah, okay. We're going to take a quick time out now that we've gone through that. We will be right back, and we'll be discussing Act 2 of Escape into Black when Talking Fugitive continues here on Sherrivision Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. There
together far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday, so stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you hear songs of yesterday. KSAV, we'll be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAV. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
KSAV sounds like a good station. I might have to start listening to that myself. Okay, we're back talking Fugitive with the Three Musketeers here. It's Act Two of Escape into Black. Bob, why don't you start off again?
Okay, Dave. The Fugitive Used in Reviews is proud to announce that our third book, Volume 3, Season 3, analysis and critique of all 30 episodes of what arguably to some might be the finest of the four seasons, has been published and is now available on the Internet from a wide variety of sources, including Barnes & Noble and Amazon. This is our biggest book so far, featuring extended reviews of all-time classic episodes like Landscape with Running Figures, Wife Killer, Trial by Fire, and the 2130. Also, for the first time ever, two guest reviews from longtime group members, along with our usual results of viewer polls. The announcement has been made that the DVD collection of the second 15 episodes of Season 1 will be released in a few months, I believe, near the spring. But why wait? Get your Fugitive fix now. Make somebody's Christmas. Buy Volume 3, Season 3, now available. What is the most impossible and improbable thing that you can possibly imagine happening on The Fugitive? Well, how about this? Kimball goes to a payphone at a train station and dials up Gerard, of all people in the world, and says to him, "I'm coming in, I'm turning myself over to you." Well, the chase is over. Escape in the Black, Part 2, Acts 3 and 4, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. Part 2 of our story opens with Kimball getting his fingerprints taken while he's laying in bed in his hospital room. This is another great performance by David Jansen. As Kimball sits in bed and stares at the procedure being done, somewhere inside his cloudy brain is the knowledge that this should not be taking place. It's very nerve-wracking. We've seen him get fingerprints taken before, but Kimball doesn't know why this shouldn't be happening, but it's obvious by his facial expressions that he knows it shouldn't be. Later on out in the hallway, Kimball watches as the patient is left alone sitting in a wheelchair. The man starts coughing and wheezing, and immediately Kimball does what we never see him do. He springs into action as Clark Kent dissolves into Superman, pulling the man out of the chair, onto the floor, and barking orders to the nurses that the patient is hemorrhaging and needs morphine. Kitty, we talk about this all the time. We just did a section on our previous show. There we point out that if Dr. Kimball had been even half as efficient in those flashback scenes to the night of the murder, one Mrs. Helen Kimball just might be alive today.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I said, Kimball is probably the most selective doctor in the history of TV on who he's going to help. And yeah, I mean, with the way he reacts to a total stranger needing help, you would have thought that they could have, you know, made him a little more reactive to his wife when he comes running into the house and sees her on the floor.
Well, maybe he should always have amnesia. He seems to be a better doctor when he does, because in this particular scene,
he's
absolutely heroic. I mean, he grabs the guy, puts him on the floor, and starts tells the nurses. He does the instant analysis of what's wrong with him. Oh, he's hemorrhaging. I mean, I think back to the other stories in the series, and I can't remember him ever being this good. So maybe there's an upside to having amnesia, because he seems to put everything else aside. Now, you know, I just love this scene. I like the music that's playing in the background, and all of a sudden, the nurses come out and the doctor comes out and says, he's right, this guy needs morphine. And Kimball stands up and walks slowly down the hallway in a daze. his hands are bandaged, and the confusion. I mean, it's like what Ken said at the beginning of the show. As this goes on, I mean, I've become more and more convinced that he's really got amnesia. He's now completely confused by everything. Now, having done this, Dr. Town follows him into his room, and if you thought he was suspicious before, he's 10 times more suspicious now. Well, he says to him, well, that's a great analysis. You certainly were correct, and at this point, Dr. Town, who just is amazing at this kind of stuff, is convinced that Kimmel is actually a doctor, and he treats him like a doctor. And then that brings up another whole issue here. If he's not even says to him, now what do you suppose a man who used to be a doctor would be doing roaming around the country like this and not know who he is? There must be something you're hiding here. Ken, what do you think? You think Dr. Town's really something, don't you think?
The tension scene he had there at the hospital bed, he back and forth with Richard, was very well done and very well written. You know, it was a slow pace, and then it got more juicier and juicier. You know, I guess Kimball agrees to be questioned by Dr. Town, you know, about, you know, what's your name, were you married, did you have children. I like the way they wrote that in there, you know. And then Kimball, I guess he goes under some drugs or whatever, so they can pry the information out. And then he says, Helen. And then, you know, Dr. Town, I like the way he came back to Richard, say, yes, okay, we're getting somewhere. Keep going, Richard, keep going. I thought that I like that scene very, very much. And you know what's unique about this episode is you never get the feeling that Richard Kimball has to escape or that he's a fugitive.
Right.
Everything is kind of, you know, Kimball's in this predicament of not knowing who he is, but he's not going to run out the door. He's just waiting, and he wants to find out the truth. He wants some information, and everything's kind of relaxed. It's a whole entirely different episode of what we were used to in the past. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, and while this is going on, the scene between Dan and Kimmel, we have a shift over to Margaret Ruskin, who does something that nobody else ever does. She goes looking for the one-armed man. She actually goes looking for him. Who else does that? Nobody. She's very brave. She goes looking for him, and she finds him doing his usual job as a dishwasher. This is a great scene again. She's looking for him, and he emerges from the back room looking as dirty and as dangerous as ever. And the music comes up, and I just love this scene. This is a very, very scary scene, and you got to wonder about her safety. What is she doing here with this guy? She doesn't even know who he is. She doesn't know that he committed a murder. She may be walking into more than she could ever imagine. So I really feared for her life at this point. And
well,
of course,
isn't the reason she went looking for the one-armed man because she thought maybe this one-armed man was maybe a relative of Kimball or a friend of Kimball?
I believe so, yeah. So she really had no idea. And so this is a very scary moment for us and for her. And, of course, he comes down, and she shows him this picture, and he looks at it with no reaction whatsoever. He's like, oh, I never saw this guy. I've never heard of him. I don't know who he is. And she doesn't look like she quite believes it. She walks away, and the music comes up in the background, and the scene fades out. He turns around, and he gives her a dirty look. I just love this scene because it's so scary. I mean, it's amazing to me that we never see the one-armed man kill anybody again for the rest of the series. But at this moment, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I think that this could happen here because now he's got not just Kimmel on his back, but this woman, whoever he doesn't really know who she is or really care. So that was a very, very dangerous scene for her. Plus, it's very unusual for any character in the series to actually help Kimmel try to find the one-armed man, with the exception of Wife Killer, of course, we have the reporter. But to just take this on herself, I thought was quite unusual. You know, everybody talks about, or sometimes they talk about Bill Raitt, who played the one-armed man. He was not, of course, a trained actor. And yet I think he brings just what he needs to bring to this series. I always feel that I would rather have him in there than a trained actor because the way he talks seems so real. He just mumbles. He hardly says anything. He looks dangerous, and I mean, it's just amazing to me. Now the flip side of this, of course, is that she now sets him off, and we have something else happen right before the end of Act Two that we also have never seen in the series before. This episode is full of these kind of things. And that is that while Dr. Tal and Kimmel are going back and forth trying to figure out who he is, some one-armed man decides to suddenly out of nowhere become proactive, and we see just before the act fades out, a hand dialing a telephone, putting his fingers in one hand in the little slot there in the days when there was a dial on telephones, and the camera pulls back, and it's the one-armed man turning Kimball into the police. He's turned the entire thing around. He's never done this up until now, and he says, "Police department, get me homicide." And the music comes up in the background. Ken, you got to admit, this is a great scene, isn't it?
I was shocked. I was absolutely floored. I really was, because, you know, the first time we saw the one-armed man was the girl from Little Egypt.
Right.
We just saw him running. And then we saw him in Search in a Windy City on the bus.
Right.
So this is the third time we've seen him. Right. We haven't heard him talk. I guess when Margaret Ruskin asked him, "Do you know this guy?" And did he actually say something? Did he say no?
I thought he just nodded his head.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So he really hasn't talked.
Right.
So we get to the phone booth, and the music is creepy, and he dials, and all of a sudden, and we have no idea what's going on. He knows, you know, from what he saw in the car, right? He saw Richard Kimball in the car, and he
right.
stared at him.
Right.
So by seeing the photograph, he knows now that Kimball doesn't know who he is or whatever. He's in the hospital.
Right. Right.
So he's going to take the initiative to call the police and say, "Hey, Richard Kimball is in the hospital. Go get him." I was floored.
I know. And that's one of those great moments that you remember for your entire life. It's just fantastic. And, of course, you have to film it the right way, and they filmed it the right way by not showing who he was. It's a little like the scene back in Search of the Windy City. Remember when we saw him in the phone booth? We saw him in the phone booth there, and
yeah.
he turned around slowly, and as he comes around, you see he's got one arm. And I think the first time I ever saw him, I literally jumped out of the scene. Wow, there he is. He's real. He's a real guy. So, and this is very unusual because we never see him proactive. You would think he's killed before. You know what? He has no reason to not just kill Richard Kimball. I always wonder about that, and perhaps we'll do a show in the future on that, of why the one-armed man, knowing that Kimball is stalking him around the country, doesn't just take him out. Just take him out. Just trap him somewhere and kill him because he's got nothing to lose. He's already killed. Why would a one-armed man put up with this, knowing that Kimball is going to lay a trap for him somewhere? I've always wondered about that. He certainly has it in him to kill people. He's done it before. And
but maybe if he kills Kimball, that might make Gerard think that maybe there's something to the one-armed man theory.
Yeah, but how's he going to catch him? Now I think he can get away. Well, maybe we'll talk about it in the future. Just personally, if it was me, I want to take him out before he takes me out.
All right, and you aren't talking about taking him out for dinner either, are you?
No.
Okay, we're going to be back in 2 weeks. It'll be on December 4th, and at that time, it'll be part two, acts three and four of the same episode, Escape into Black. And then what do we have? And then one more on December 18th, and then we're into the holidays.
That's right.
So, everybody, thanks for listening. And we'll see you again or hear from you again in 2 weeks, talking Fugitive here on Retro Radio.